After every conversation that I've had these past couple of weeks, 20-second conversation with the parking cashier, or long chat on the phone, or a chance meeting in the grocery store, encouraging words have been shared at the end. Spring is coming. It will be here soon. This won't last forever. Spring will come. It always does. I've said that to others, some of them who have looked at me doubtfully when I've said it. Others have said it to me when they hear how my car got stuck in my driveway twice last Sunday, coming out and coming back in. Spring is coming. It always does. In fact, I noticed the buds on the lilac tree outside my kitchen window this week. Despite every evidence to the contrary that they will meet warm weather, they continue to grow microscopically every day. I've lived in the Deep South, and I have lived in the Upper Midwest, and while all of creation is readying itself for the new life that emerges in spring, we here in the Upper Midwest absolutely deserve it. In a few months, our world will be transfigured from a white landscape to one full of color and mud and sounds of birds and soft winds and the tractors readying the fields for the planting. We use words like transformation, transfigure, new life to describe the emerging of our landscape from the bitter cold blanket of winter to the glory of spring. Even the word resurrection has been compared to this act of nature. We can explain the science of what happens when the snow melts and the seeds germinate with words of glory, but we grasp for how to explain the mystery of the actions of God in our midst. The transfiguration of Christ that we read about in Luke today, or the miracles of healing. How do we explain that? How do we explain the wonder of the resurrection? None of our language is equipped to fully explain the unexplainable love of God. For God's work in us is a mystery. We're invited to open our ears and eyes and mind to see God at work and to wonder, what's happening? Peter and John and James are invited by Jesus to go up to the top of the mountain to pray. How many of us go out into nature to pray, to listen for God, to meditate, and just to try to sort things out? Without warning, as they're praying, Jesus becomes changed. His face changes, the writer says, into something otherworldly. We don't know exactly how it changes, but it was remarkable. Whatever happened. His clothes dazzle with brightness, and then Moses and Elijah join the party. And the three of them talk about Jerusalem and about what will happen there to Jesus. His departure, also called his exodus. In truth, they're talking about his death. What those three disciples, as excited as they are, cannot see, and if they could see, would not understand, is that this moment of glory on the mountaintop, this moment of awesome light, takes place in the shadow of the cross. A few days after this magnificent moment, so mind-blowing that Jesus tells those three disciples to just keep it to yourselves for right now, Jesus and his crew start their way to Jerusalem, a long journey that will culminate in a trial, crucifixion on that cross, and a burial. And after this moment on the mountaintop, after this claiming of Christ by God as God's Son, a moment that everybody up there listens to, after that comes the terrible silence of God that lasts for what seems to be an eternity until God speaks again in the declaration of the resurrection, a sound so mighty that it rivals the first time that God spoke at creation. And on that mountaintop, God spoke in preparation for what was to come. Not only did God claim Jesus as his son, but God showed the disciples and us what resurrection looks like. For that transfiguration was just not proof of Jesus' divinity. That was a resurrection appearance before the resurrection, before even the death. That's what that was. The light of resurrection illuminates the shadows of our lives and shows us that God's promise of love and of presence, even if it's God is unseen and God is forgotten, God is at work. God is at work out of sight until God breaks into our world, sometimes with the power of the transfiguration, sometimes in a quiet voice of truth and love, sometimes in the outward sign of the promise, a flower that springs forth from a long-buried seed later in the spring. Everything in this world dies. Every institution, everything with a breath. But everything of God will be raised up. Suffering and sorrow are real, but God of the mountaintop walks with us in that suffering and will raise us up, and our radiance will shine, our faces changed to reflect the glory of God, our clothes dazzling with brightness. Love will not be defeated. Love wins. It cannot be voted down. It cannot be legislated against. Love cannot be laughed at. In all of our struggles for a beloved family member or for a dream lost, for justice in our neighborhood or in the world, whatever failures you fall into, before the awful moment even starts, know that in love you are already risen. You are already God's transfigured person. Sometime today, later on or tonight, when you're washing your face or brushing your teeth, I'd like for you to look in the mirror. Really look into the mirror. Look into your eyes in that mirror. Look at the wonder of your beautifully created face. Gaze at it for a while. Give yourself some time. Look, there you are, shining with God's transfigured love. There in your eyes is the transfigured Christ. There you are, God's beloved child. And we say, listen to us. We will tell of hope. We will show peace. We will tell of love. This is what God's free, beloved, resurrected children do. For yes, spring will come, and so does resurrection. The most important thing is to go and tell about this good news. Go in peace, go with courage, and go in hope, and tell of spring.